Blog Talk Radio.
This is Ken English. Welcome to another edition of the School of Social Marketing with Dr. Ron Capps. Each week, Dr. Capps and I get together to talk about social media. A lot's happening, Dr. Capps, in every week. It really doesn't matter. There's always an interesting topic. Last night I was at the SCORE workshop, the business consulting group that I participate in. I record the video, and I'm still working on trying to capture the presentation of the person doing it so I can put it online in an efficient way. The programs last 90 minutes, and nobody's really going to want to sit and watch 90 minutes. But I try to break it up into segments and the like. But last night it was on social media, which has become one of the most popular of the workshops that SCORE offers. The interest in social media, but there's 45 people or so filling this little meeting room. The presenter's there, and she's really focusing on a couple topics. Facebook, Pinterest, LinkedIn are really the driving sources in what she's focused on. But the questions keep coming back the same way, that people don't understand how to utilize this. And I'm overwhelmed, I can't do it. They don't understand, and she brings up Hootsuite and all of this. But boy, there certainly is a gap in people, how they can utilize and what they should be doing with social media. Big gap, isn't there?
Well, yeah, and I think it has evolved from the, oh, this is just a frivolous thing and I don't need to know what you're eating or where you are, and into that isn't what social media is. And yet so many people still hold that stereotype of the early days of social media. You know, back in 2007, when Twitter was just finding their legs. And, you know, I mean, Facebook, for as large as it is, you know, it's barely been around a decade. And it's overwhelming, and it's the thing the, quote, kids do. And, in fact, you know, they are swimming in a sea of misconceptions. And the fact, as you and I both know, and as we've been sharing with people since 2008, you can't exist in the world, and you certainly can't run a business putting your head in the sand when it comes to the use, and for that matter, the abuse of social media, and learning how to do it for no other reason than to monitor your own presence and to monitor the way that people refer to you and your brand out there. At the lowest common denominator, that would be reputation management, when in fact what could be done so much more readily is showing them how they can tap into their community, their client base. But to do that, one of the things that they have to do, and one of the things your person at the SCORE meeting may be having to cope with, is learning to talk to them in the language they understand. You know, for example, if you were to go in and talk to one of the restaurant owners there in the area about what social media can do for them, and you talk about click-through, and you talk about a cart abandonment, they don't know any of that. They don't care about that. That's not the language they're used to. But if you start talking to them about cover, and you talk to them about coupon discounts to get more clients through the door, to let people know about the specials, those are the things they understand. And you need to learn to talk to these people in terms they understand. And I'm sure that's one of the issues that people are having when they talk to people that have always done it one way. And, you know, they're still, you know, thinking Yellow Pages are the answer to everything, when in fact Yellow Pages, no, they aren't the answer to anything, and they've now gone online. But I'll get off my soapbox.
Well, then the soapbox is right there. It's become a podium, you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, the small business people, and that's what this group is really all about. They're the ones that need to understand it better. One guy actually asked a question: how do I know who's looking at my social media? How do I know if they're customers? How do I know, anything about them? I'm thinking, well, gee, there are. I mean, certainly you can know an awful lot about your customers, and certainly the information is out there. But I'd like to ask a question, I guess, before I go off of you on that tangent. A friend of mine sent me an email this morning saying my email has been hijacked unless I'm promoting embroidery from Oprah. How do people do that? I mean, I've gotten some of this, and I'm sure you get it from people, and people might even be sending out stuff under your name. But how does somebody grab my email address and send out something like that?
Well, they probably have harvested it somewhere, and I don't know if they are doing anything more than spoofing your email. If they are actually using an email that you personally own, and it's on one of your domains, I would get a hold of my domain host right away and see what is happening there. And you might find that someone has got in through the back door and either created an email account in there, or they may have put a script in that is running the email off of your domain. Now, if you're talking about they're getting things from you under Gmail or, Hotmail or Yahoo or something like that, then that would be something they would need to take up with them. As an example, on Microsoft, I had to go in and change my setup on some of my accounts because my name had been hijacked by someone in Eastern Europe. And so if ever I tried to log into my Microsoft account or Microsoft Live or anything like that under the Niche Prof, I was coming up with some female over in Eastern Europe. And they just essentially ripped it off. And, you can then get a hold of Microsoft or Microsoft Live, and allegedly they will help you correct it, and I found that to be futile. They really have, I think, more things on their plate than that. And so, you pretty much have to abandon it and move on and make sure that, you realize that you need to be monitoring what people are doing or saying out there under that particular account. Or if you can, and in this case I couldn't, I go in and terminate the account.
Well, I'm hopeful that people recognize, if they know who I am, they recognize that I wouldn't be sending something quite like that. But I kind of go with the flow right now because I get it periodically, knowing full well that people are not, that I know are not sending me stuff from Oprah and things like that. But
one of the quick things and solutions to do, because I've had that happen quite frequently, people are aware of the Nigerian scams. They're aware of the, a distant relative has died scam. But another very popular scam that keeps cropping up over the last few years is I was mugged on my vacation. Mm-hmm. They got my passport. They got my money. And that is usually perpetrated through Facebook or something like that. And what I found, whenever I've gotten anything like that and I knew the person, I would get a hold of them directly through other channels and say, by the way, you need to know this. Were you at? No, I'm sitting in my home in Portland, Oregon. Yeah, I didn't think you'd been mugged in a sub, in the underground in London last night. So do your own due diligence to check their back channels and other ways. I mean, you have several different ways you could get a hold of me. I have different ways I could get a hold of you, independent of the social media or the email, to verify, are you in trouble, do you need help, rather than the blatant blasts that go out through, like, Facebook.
Well, the ones offering a lot of money are really the, you look and say, some obscure person has got access to millions and they'll share it with me. of course you will. But one of the things that came up last night is something that I just started to dabble with. A few days ago, in fact, I crossed an article that was talking about live streaming on the phone. And the site that I had found at that point, and I know now there's at least two, but it was called, it is called Meerkat, Meerkat. And the site itself is meerkatapp.com. And there's another one that I found out called Periscope. And it appears that, Twitter has acquired Periscope. So they're going to go in that direction. And Meerkat is, and I think Facebook acquired Meerkat. I'm not real clear on that, but each one recognizing that this is a tool. But it has to be connected to a specific account. So, I mean, I set up a new Twitter account because I didn't want to fool around on something that I've actually, you know, putting stuff to and make, because I didn't know what it was going to come out with. And, you know, it streams. If you have a good signal on my phone, I can bring it up and it's a streaming. I can see what I'm pointing at. I can talk about it, but I don't know if anybody's listening. Well, I mean, right now, nobody even knows I'm doing it, so there's nobody listening. But I watched a couple samples. There's a restaurant in Stockholm, Sweden, that was taking you on a tour and showing you their cooking procedures and all of this. And, you know, there's a few people with it. I guess what really got me interested is one of the samples or examples, one of the people that was streaming, was walking through a cathedral in England. And he didn't narrate it because it was inside the cathedral and it was quiet and all that. But, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, wow, this guy's taking me on a tour of some big cathedral and, you know, somewhere in England. You know, and I could certainly do the same thing if I wanted to take people to the the Halifax River Yacht Club or the Daytona Beach Art Festival or any of these other type of things. But they have to be connected. It's kind of the question. They have to have signed up on my Twitter account to get it if I'm feeding it from Twitter. That's correct, as far as you know.
Well, yeah. However, it's gotten to the point now where Google is going to be indexing Twitter feeds. And so while on a live feed, I don't know what the real time on that would be. But there might be other things, and I'm sure that there will soon be a channel guide or something to people that do use it on a regular basis. Just like you could set up a Twitter list for people that you might want to follow that do live streaming via their Twitter feed. But no, I'm right now looking at that as a possibility on a couple of projects. If you go into the Google Play App Store and you put in live video or live cast, you'll find that there are also several other applications that will do it. And if you're using a Windows 8 or Windows 8.1 platform, you can frequently be able to also run the application if it's made available in that format for a mobile device like a Windows phone. You can use it on your laptop or your desktop computer. And then that gives you a whole new, avenue for broadcasting things like YouTube Live or Hangouts or just broadcasting live on the web, as opposed to some of the other, like you stream live.
Well, I mean, I've looked at Ustream, and I know somebody that's using it quite a bit. The Meerkat app is actually a .co. I think I said .com because you get used to that. But Meerkatapp.co. And then there is something called MeerkatStreams.com, which is aggregating. And I think that's probably the path that I followed, because now when I click on the streams, it's got the Funky Fairy, the Roxy, Cheryl, Fortis Health, Nicole, Meg Lee. There's a lot of people that are doing this, relatively speaking, of course. But it does give counters underneath it of people, who are watching. And some people, it's just watching them. It's a whole voyeur world, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and obviously, if we go back and realize why images became so popular in the pre-internet days and the sharing of images, it's no doubt that same interest area will soon take over things like Meerkat and Periscope, and it'll be interesting to see how they put adult filters on it.
Yeah, well, certainly they say no nudity, so that people won't do that, of course. But this is just a whole new area, isn't it?
We all know
it's opening up streaming.
Excuse me?
Yeah. This streaming is a whole new category, new area of social media, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it goes back to something you and I experimented with when we were doing the 12-second videos a few years back, and that went to the wayside. But what do we have now? We have a Snapchat, you know, which is very much the same thing. Or you have these little videos and vignettes you can shoot with Meerkat or Periscope or the other live things. They're out there for a period of time and then they disappear. But they don't really disappear. Not if you know how and to dig and look for them, which I'm sure is keeping police departments busy around the globe.
You know, I would imagine. So on the site to them, Meerkatstreams.com, it's got a little button that says new record upcoming streams with our live video recorder. So it's already moving into that because, you know, you apparently you can capture, well, if I click on learn more, which is what it's all about, we're giving you your own live video recorder so you can never miss a scheduled stream. This is currently being launched in beta, so kick the tires and come along for the ride. Let us know what you think. Unlimited recordings, unlimited queue, up to 60 minutes of recording per video while in beta, full chat transcripts of recorded videos. You can do it with Facebook and Twitter. So I'll probably, you know, sign up and look at that as well. There's so many of these little events that I go to that I can see a little application for it, but it's connecting to an audience, and that's where my my fuzzy area is. If anybody that's following you on on Twitter is notified and they can watch you, then you've got a core base, and I would imagine then, if you're streaming something they're interested in, they could retweet it, you know, and spread it out to their people as well. That's the logical expansion, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, retweets and reshares. You know, as Willie Crawford pointed out not too long ago, I had told him many years ago that retweets were really the gold standard or the currency that we're learning to deal with. And that is true. It's become a major measurement factor for getting a foothold and spreading, you know, the information on whatever topic it might be. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that your experimentation with the live video doesn't have some of that same aspect to it. For example, you've got Biker Week in Daytona, and if you're doing live streams, you're going to have a lot of people running around with their mobile devices finding out what you're streaming.
Yeah, very true. I mean, that application is definitely one. You know, and there's many others as well. But as we move through our allotted time here, is there a particular topic that you wanted to bring up and take a few minutes with?
Well, I don't know that there's anything specific. There is an avalanche of material out there being hawked, for want of a better term. Some of it good, some of it not so good. It'll be interesting to see how things shake out. Josh Zamora has brought out a very interesting platform. But if it does hold up and does remain robust, could solve a lot of the social media problems out there, in particular regarding account creation and so forth, with his creation of a social robot and keeping that updated with different platforms that you can go out and create your own profiles and begin to develop your own subnets with around different topic areas. Some interesting training I've noticed with that. There are things being done out there right now by Paul Clifford. He's taken his icon lead concept over into video. Basically what you're doing is you're putting hot spots on your video just like he could with the images before, and you can then at a particular point in the video have a hot spot pop up to call or for a call to action or many other things. And in fact, you can actually even have a hot spot on it that will put a video inside of a video. So it'll be interesting to see how that experimentation plays out. And as someone that's had the icon lead for a while, haven't really used it yet, but I'm seeing applications for it. For example, if you're doing any PowerPoint presentations, converting them into video, like Tracy Maher and several other people, Mon Naylor and so forth, recommend and do, you can take those slides or images and you can put actionable hotspots into the slide image. And basically then when you've created a video, you've got a series of different hotspots going throughout the video with call to action and social networking and so forth built into the media itself. And so it'll be interesting to see how these things begin to play out. Right now, you know, I'm developing a particular niche and seeing how that, you know, shakes out. Finding it very interesting that it's a matter of finding out what a trend is, why it becomes a trend, and then how you can go in and you can adapt that trend or monetize that trend in other ways. So it will be interesting to see what exactly shakes out with that in the days ahead, too.
Well, I mean, it's mind-boggling, you know, as I see some of these things unfold. As soon as I learn how to do something, there's something new out there. I'm using the Uzign, Y-O-U-Z-I-G-N software more frequently now. There's a bunch of templates, as you all know, but I like to just use the main one, and I've been able to drop the background out of images, and I suspect that it's very similar. Well, it's patterned after Photoshop and elements of that. It's not perfect, the Uzign, in terms of dropping it out, but it's really close. And if you take your time, you can. What I find it's kind of strange is the way a screen. I didn't really understand it, I guess, but pixels are little square boxes. And so you're trying to manipulate little squares with circular erasers. And so it's tough to get a straight line, and it's tough to go around somebody's head or ear or, that type of thing. You can zoom in real close and start to pick them off that way. But then when you step back out of it, I mean, I've superimposed myself over different structures. I was able to merge the infrared conferences in September in Las Vegas. I'm hoping to get out there, but whether I do or not, I still like to play around with this because infrared images are really cool. But I was able to take the hotel, the South Point Hotel it's at, drop this sky background out of it, and then put the hotel on top of a thermal image of Las Vegas that the people have. And so I've created this layered effect. And you start to see how imaginative, and creative if you want to be. And sometimes, you become so creative that you've wasted an hour and a half in doing something and you say, well, okay, now what am I going to do with it? But the tools are really available if you want to learn how to use them, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's the key, learning how to use them. I mean, it takes time. I've gotten the habit now of if I have a new program or something, I will go in and I will download the videos if they aren't locked, and some people are locking the videos, but download the videos so that I've got them on my own hard drive. And then I can do a couple of things. Number one, have them essentially on demand. And number two, not be eating up bandwidth by going back and streaming them periodically. I'm also doing some work right now with a little plug-in that Brett Rutecki brought out. Basically, it's, you know, it's called Jack Jacker. And what it does is it will allow you to go in and take an authority page or something and add your banner across the top and then embed it into your WordPress site. And I'm doing some experimentation with that. And he just came out with a variation that I'll have the ability to resell. He's not going to sell them. That is called the gold version, and he used that as a bonus for a particular product that will allow you to go in and add your own HTML into it, add a pop-up box over someone else's site, a lot of other things like that. So I'm doing a little checking into what are the, you know, implications of that, what are the ethics of that, and it will be interesting. That particular plugin would also go through, and any link, if you wanted to, that shows up on the existing page would be redirected to wherever you want it to go. So that creates a whole new ethical conundrum. And I'll wrestle with that probably over the next week or two. And along that same line, with Vicon Lead and Icon Lead, according to Paul Clifford, who developed it, it's not in violation of terms of service if I were to go in and take one of your videos and I could embed my icons on it, essentially hijacking your video. We're entering that wild, wild west of the internet again, of what is right and wrong. And at times like this, you know, we've all heard the term black hat, white hat, gray hat marketing. And someone told me a few years ago, if you're in business to make money, there's only one hat.
Tell me, what are you downloading the videos with? What software?
Well, there are a lot of different programs. I've got a video downloader that I use. I mean, you can also actually.
I mean, I've tried a couple different ones, but I figured, you know, since you experiment with so many of these, you might have
video
something that's better than any.
Video downloader is probably the best to do it with, and that's what it's called. Let me see if I can give you a video downloader ultimate.com.
Okay, I'll check that out.
And then my friend Matthew McDonald has brought out some interesting things for creating your own YouTube-type ads so that you determine what ads are on the intros or the outros of your videos. He's also made his video channel streamer player available, where if you've got his version of 10 videos in a channel, it bumped up to 50. Where you can create your own video channels out there. One of the other things that I used for the Heartland Hypnosis Conference was not only his custom video player, but also his Flick Cinema, and that was very well received. They really liked the presentation of the video in the format of a movie theater, but you can also do it in other formats. So there are just so many things you can do out there if you have enough time, enough energy, and you have the tools at your disposal.
Well, and you have to invest a few bucks in the process. And sometimes you start to acquire these things, and at $17 or $15, it's not, it's not a lot. But all of a sudden, you turn around, and you get 10 or 12 of them, and this one's now coming in at 39, and then you got an upsell and a one-time offer and all this. You can spend a lot of money with this stuff, can't you?
No kidding.
But it's an investment if you use it, and I am guilty of acquiring and not using some stuff, and I'm really trying to go back, not acquire now, but learn how to use, like the Uzine thing. I had it for quite a while, and I bought it because I dropped the background out, but then once I started experimenting, I realized, well, it's not as easy as I thought it was going to be. But you do five or six of them, and the next thing you know, it is as easy as you think it's going to be. It's just not the first couple of times, which is maybe something you tell your students. You got to try it more than once.
Well, and I think along the line with Uzine, for example, if you're investing in all of these graphics packages that are out there, whether they be photo backgrounds royalty-free or calls to action or cutesy pie images, whatever you're dealing with, there are probably ways that you can take those and import them into your Uzine as an image, upload an image, and create an arsenal of things that you like to use and just go in and whenever you need to have a new image or background or header created, you've already got the stuff there, and all you have to do is drag it into your new image and space it out. I think that may allow a lot of people to get more use out of the 83 million images they probably have on their hard drive by going through and finding the ones they really like and putting them into a central location so they can call upon them when they need them.
Well, I've learned somewhat the hard way with the Uzine thing. I would spend an hour dropping the background out, and then I didn't save it properly. And I'd go back and look for it, and I thought I did, but then I'd only have the hard image, and I'd have to drop the background out. I wasn't saving it at the right point.
Yeah.
So, all of these things are simply, it is that learning curve. I'm pretty much amazed at how much I've been able to learn over the last few years, things that, I was at the University of Central Florida has what's called a business incubator center, and that's now, and there's several locations around, but it's really to try to help the entrepreneurial people develop their concepts, and SCORE is working with that, SCORE being pretty much older business people who are volunteering to help new startups, not necessarily young people, but anybody that's got an idea and has no experience. So anyway, this center is there, and it's got all sorts of stuff around it, yet it's not utilizing video. The green screen that they have has been relegated to a storeroom. I'm looking at them saying, well, that I think should be, think about it and recognize that that's what's there. So at some point, maybe I'll have some influence with that. But I'm there last night for the thing, and I'm in, there's new co-working space. Push a button to get Instagram, and I'm posting, 13-second videos of a little tour of this with Instagram. And then when I got home, I looked at my Facebook page, and here's all these little videos that I put together. And it's really understanding the mechanism and recognizing. I mean, I can do a 5-minute video in 13-second blasts if I wanted to, and just do it on Instagram, or I could record the video and post it later on. It's fascinating. I really find it fascinating. Sometimes frustrating, but fascinating usually.
Well, yeah. And for example, during the course of our call, back within the last 10 minutes, check your email box, and you're going to find an email from Andrew Darius, who's the person behind Explaindio video, and
yep.
They have green screen added to the Explaindio 2.0.
Yep, I see it now.
So now you know what you're doing to the call.
I'll go check that one out and see how it's there. You know, again, a green screen was such a magical thing until you know how it's done. You know, I guess that's like magic in general. You know, once you understand the principles of so much of this stuff, you say, well, it's not that complicated. But you can't do it unless you got the tools. I mean, I was looking at, before we started talking, I was doing some green screen stuff, like experimenting between creating the green screen on Usein and versus creating the green screen in Sony Vegas. You know, and I'm trying to see what advantages there is to one or the other, because sometimes I will get distracted and go into something else, and I say, well, gee, I already knew how to do that in the video editing software. I don't need to do it over here, yet there are advantages to doing it in just an image one at a time as opposed to the video editing software. But if you know what the tools do best, then you can be much more efficient, can't you?
Yeah, and all you have to do is remember that if you're doing it with a live green screen or if you're laying out on the lawn, like if you remember our buddy Todd suggested time, don't wear a green screen. Otherwise, we're going to have a dancing head.
Well, it was just in closing, last year at the Thermal Imaging Conference, they had set up a green screen, and that was my role to put anybody that wanted to do a video, I shoot the video against the green screen. And one of the exhibitors does thermal moisture detection on roofs. And so it looks like a vacuum cleaner that they push along. And so we're going to do this, and I had a great idea. But I didn't pay enough attention to the machine that he's pushing had a green head on it. So, you know, when I went around and looked at it and took the green background out, well, the machine itself disappeared. So you really do have to be careful with that stuff.
Yeah, at times like that, you probably should have been using a blue screen.
Well, it was so new last year that I was just happy to be doing it. And I get into it, you know, it would certainly encourage people out who do hear this, if they do find something that they're interested in, really like, stay with it and push through that, because the hardest part is the startup, you know, and then after that it becomes much easier, but you're going to make some mistakes, you know, and hopefully they're not, you know, really bad ones. I had other stuff that I was able to you know, rebound from my disappointment that my green screen of the green tool disappeared. But all works itself out, you know, and now I can see how so many of these things fit together. I'm feeling really comfortable using some of these tools that not long ago I was really uncomfortable with and just plain annoyed by. But now it's like, wow, this is cool. I can do something that I couldn't have done a few months ago. So there's a real sense of accomplishment with a lot of this stuff.
That there is, and, you know, it's a creative process, and just like the artist that finishes a painting or an author that finishes a book, there's a satisfaction in it.
Well, I'm going to go check out the Green Screen Explainedio 2.0 and see how that differs from other stuff that I'm doing. Is there a closing thought that you would like to make?
No, just everyone enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day weekend. And see you next week.
You know, just in a closing thought, yesterday was the 10th anniversary of the death of Ray Pelletier. You know, and you know, I was looking at some different things, and I knew it was in May, but I didn't realize the 21st. You know, what the day or whatever it was, and everything. And then it's like 10 years. Time passes so fast that, you know, I would encourage people to not put something off and do it now, you know, and just, you know, go for the gusto at this moment in time, because you don't know when the sands of time are going to run out. You know, Ray left a lot of people, you know, quickly. You know, it was an injury. It was a blood clot. Poof, he's gone. My brother-in-law, who passed away 3 years ago, his friends in Rio were able to get, it's a whole different world in different countries, the way they treat life after, so to speak. But anyway, his friends down there were able to acquire my brother-in-law's bones, had them cremated, and then took the ashes to Copacabana Beach, and which is the place that Richard wanted to be more than any place else. And they had a little ceremony and took some pictures, and I'm going to be posting it online. But, you know, the surf came in and took the ashes out. And, you know, and it's just, I guess life, you know, when somebody you know passes away, it really does make you pay more attention to your own life and sense of accomplishment. So I'd encourage people to become active and get out there and do things while you can. So with that, Dr. Cass, have a really nice weekend yourself, and I look forward to doing this again soon.
Okay. Take care, one and all. And like I say, enjoy the Memorial Day weekend, and let's see what we've gotten our hands involved with by the time we meet next week.
Indeed, we will do that. This is Ken English on behalf of Dr. Capps, wishing you a very pleasant weekend. You can reach Dr. Capps on Gmail, nicheprof@gmail.com. I'm mediamojoguy@gmail.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back, assuming that all goes well. Take care now. Bye.
All right.